Welcome to ITE 1, Module 2, Part 1 for Semester 2. Okay, so whoever that is very quiet. What problems are you having with the worksheet? Because that is what we're going to talk about first.
Well, I'm not sure if it's just trying to read the tables or how it's laid out. I'll get some side assistance and see if I can resolve it that way. That's more or less the issue. I'm not really understanding what to do just to lay out everything.
Okay, I got some of that. You are not near your microphone, Paul. I don't know what you are doing, but you are not near your microphone. If you're using a desk mic, that thing's got to be about 3 inches away from your mouth or we will not hear you. Basically, the tables, if you haven't done Word tables before, they can be a bit difficult. Basically, you've basically got a tab across in the table when you're actually reading them. So when you arrow down into the table, tab across to read what's in the actual columns. And be careful if you tab at the end of a row because it will add an extra column, but JAWS will warn you.
You can hit Alt-Control and the arrow keys if you're using JAWS to move from column to column with right and left arrow or row to row with up and down arrow. If you're using Windows, you'll do Control Insert in your arrow keys. And if you're using NVDA, I'm not quite sure. So have a fun time figuring that out. That's so you don't have to tab across.
Also, pressing Insert F1 inside the table row, inside the actual table, should give you context-sensitive help on the how to use the tables as well in JAWS. That's certainly something that's worth trying.
As I said, you don't have to use the tables. What you're looking for is what you're looking for is a power supply, a CPU, some RAM, and I believe a video card. And then you enter the 5 questions at the bottom.
And a heat sink.
Oh, and a heat sink. I'm sorry, you're also looking for a cooling device.
Just a suggestion, Paul, if you get a chance between now and next week, you might want to play with sound recorder and test your microphone so that you can hear what you sound like. There's also a test with test button in the Ventrilo setup window that will let you hear how quiet you are, and that will actually let you figure out which microphone you're actually using and how far away from it you are. If you're using a desk microphone, you want to be no more than 6 inches away from it.
But you're not actually on the headset, I don't believe.
If you've changed the headset, you'll need to close Ventrilo and open again if it's a USB headset.
You're still on your laptop
headset.
Microphone.
Yeah, Ventrilo doesn't know you've changed it yet. So try leaving, coming back, and see if it fixes.
Yeah, that might do ya. Is anyone else having any trouble with finding anything on the worksheet or not understanding anything? Okay, so I should be seeing everybody's worksheets, is that right then?
No, I think you'll find that they'll talk to you individually on Skype. They just don't want to put themselves up as being embarrassed in front of the rest of the class. I think that's probably more
fair
likely
enough.
What we're seeing here.
Okay.
My problem
well, you guys
is
have nothing really to be embarrassed
technical.
About. Go ahead. Oh, all right, fair enough.
Sorry, I just said my problem is
but it's really nothing to be embarrassed about, and yep, that's no problem.
We can all help each other, so.
Exactly. You guys have nothing to be ashamed of here. It's a good time to discuss this sort of thing because you have classmates that might have suggestions that maybe I don't or somebody else who you might ask won't have, and it's a good time for brainstorming and ideas.
Makes sense. I'm trying to find my copy of Office to reinstall because JAWS seems to like to lose focus in Word a lot, and my problems will probably get fixed by a format, but I'm copying all my stuff off, and I swear there's a gremlin in my iPod. But as far as Office goes, it keeps saying blank a lot of the time when I try to use JAWS, and once I got that fixed, it... The computer's lagging horribly. I've tried a couple of malware tools, so I'm not sure. Like I said,
that sounds like a video interception problem.
The blank lines did me in. I thought I was done, and I wasn't.
It's not quite as bad as college, but I'm trying to, as it was when I was in college, but I'm trying to get on it. Maybe my computer doesn't want me to learn anything. I don't know. Like I said, I'm just getting fed up, about ready to just get fed up and format this thing.
It sounds like a video intercept problem, though. You might want to...
How do I troubleshoot that?
You reinstall JAWS if you haven't already, and that will reinstall the mirror driver.
I just upgraded to a later version of JAWS 2. Not JAWS 2. JAWS 11.
Okay.
Which version of Office are you running? 27 or 2007 or what?
2003.
Okay. Yeah, it should be alright.
Should be just fine.
In my experience, probably the best way to tidy up JAWS would be to install NVDA, because you should have that, because it just makes life easier. Uninstall JAWS, blow away all of the C program files, Freedom Scientific stuff, nuke it, and then reinstall JAWS on top of that.
Makes sense.
If you use any Freedom Scientific products other than JAWS, be careful what you go deleting.
If you only
use JAWS, you're good, but if you were to use OpenBook or Magic, you could break stuff.
My
keep in mind, you're going to lose a key.
I don't
You can get around that. We know how to get around that. Yeah. You can actually get around that by backing up the activator folder. And if you back up the activator folder before you smash it and put the activator folder back, your key comes back. So,
really?
No loss
good.
Of key.
And good. I've just proven this weekend, because I had to blow my computer away, that it works.
I'm really glad I said something then, because I sure didn't know.
Yeah.
Seems to me.
Yeah, no, it works. It's very good. If you're on the exact same hardware, putting on the exact same software.
What I did with the exercises, I went in and changed everything to a text file. That way I could read it without worrying about the tables.
Makes sense. Yeah, ever since Word majorly let me down in college, I just use Notepad and WordPad
where
possible. Yeah, you sound great. It's a computer-wide bug in some
Aiden,
ways
you're
too.
Staying
the lagginess
when you're not speaking, by the way.
Yeah, fair enough. It was quiet in here, and I figured better than pushing the key all the time.
No, you need to push the key all the time on here. Sorry.
Okay, there was no one else around, so I figured it was okay to do that with silence.
Except
no,
that
because
it,
when
it
you're
makes
actually
key,
the
connection
there's actually
lag.
There's a hiss, and well, the other problem is if you actually keep your key held down, there's actually a quiet hiss which doesn't get eliminated by my silence compression algorithm, so there'll just be lots of your hissing computer. So, the lectures will be a lot longer. No, it's all right, as long as you know. There'll just be lots of hissy noises, and then we'll send all the students over to your place to complain. But yeah, I don't actually... I only noise gate on digital silence. I don't actually noise gate on a hiss, so those hisses stay in there. If I noise gated on hisses and stuff, you'd get all sorts of weird artifacts.
Oh, okay. Oh, good to know.
Yeah, the only people that do the key auto key is whoever's giving the lecture. But
I do have one.
And even then, they have to play with it.
1.47 worksheet. I assume that things like the video card have to be compatible with the motherboard. We can't just go out and pick any video card we choose.
Everything's
yeah,
supposed
that's
to
correct.
Fit together. Yeah, it's supposed to...
Yeah, the video card has to be compatible. The aim of the exercise, and I don't like the fact that the exercise is in Chapter 1. I think it's a bit of a nasty thing to launch on the students in Chapter 1. I'd put it up around Chapter 6 or 7. But, yeah, all of the components have got to be compatible. And all of the components have got to be go into that computer.
That'd go better with Chapter 3, actually, is even if they put it there when you're talking
about... It really would, the disassembly and assembly type of thing.
Well, you can move it, Grace. You're the instructor.
But that's...
I could. I don't really think of doing something like that, the curriculum, because you've got so many labs in Chapter 3 anyway, that's probably why they put it here.
That's true. You get tons in Chapter 3. You love it. I did.
Yeah, but they're pretty straightforward, though.
They are.
Basically, the key to getting this right, it's a bit like building cars. You want Ford parts with a Ford. You want Holden parts for a Holden. Some people don't want to forward and some people don't want to hold an OK, but the same holds for Intel and AMD. You've got to make sure that the slots on the motherboard match the slots that you're going to put the video cards into. So if you're building AGP, you want AGP video cards, although good luck getting those these days. Or if you're building PCI Express, you want PCI Express video cards. If you are building a CPU socket, you need to know what socket is on the system board. That needs to match the socket of the CPU. If it's a 775 socket on the board, it's a 775 socket on the CPU. If the RAM, if the board takes DDR2 RAM, put DDR2 RAM in it. If it takes DDR3, put DDR3 RAM in it. The actual nomenclature has to match across the components that you are installing into the board. Otherwise, it is literally like trying to put Ford parts into a Holden. Whilst it is possible to get a hammer and make that happen, it doesn't work that well with computers.
Yeah, you are. They did something really cruel to you guys, actually, which is not quite fair. Not something I would have done this time around. You've got a motherboard with 1066, 800. The maximum FSB for the motherboard is 1066. Guess what? The maximum FSB for your RAM is 800. So you have to use RAM with an FSB of 800.
No, Grace, you don't. No.
That's what I looked it up in the Wikipedia, and they said that is, or not the Wikipedia, and that is they
no,
said you cannot
even
use
if the max
RAM
speed is
that has
no, if
1066.
The max speed is 1066 on the motherboard, you can use anything lower than that. It'll just throttle down, so you won't be getting
right.
the full speed of your front side bus. But no, you can. Sorry about that. You can use slower RAM. You're just wasting
right. But the RAM
money.
The RAM slots only take.
Don't confuse the front side bus with the speed of the RAM. The RAM does not run at the speed of the front side bus.
I can show you the article that I looked up that said it could only take RAM up to 800.
That particular motherboard can only take that much RAM just for that motherboard itself? Is that what we're talking about specifically, the Gigabyte 965
yeah.
with all the letters on the end?
Yeah, that's right.
But if you put faster RAM in, Grace, it just underclocks the RAM. It won't stop it from working. You can put 1066 MHz RAM in an 800 MHz FSB. It'll just run at 800 MHz, and that's fine. It'll
so
still work.
You're sort
it'll
of wasting money if you can get the slower. If you can get the slower RAM for cheaper, it would make more sense to use it. But if you can't, then, you know.
Yeah.
All the RAM in your netbook is actually over-specced beyond what your netbook can drive it at. You've got
okay.
You've actually got 667.
Because I was looking at it, so you cannot actually even do this.
Show me the article later, and I'll have a look. Show Sean and I later, and we'll have a look. But if you put faster RAM in the board than what the RAM will than the board will take, generally speaking, the board will downclock the memory. But I mean, the definitive answer to that question, though, would be found in the system board manual for that board. And we'd need to get our hands on that to definitively answer that question. At least if I was working in a computer shop, that's what I'd do.
Okay, so what's going to be acceptable then for that lab?
Yeah, I'm not even sure that they even sell this motherboard anymore. That's the other...
They don't. I couldn't find it.
Basically, If you do a 1066, then I guess that's going to be acceptable.
Find a board that's comparable with the board that is in the lab, except, you know, find a newer one, and fill it up with parts. If you want us to edit a different board into the lab on the server, we can do that. Otherwise, the key to the lab is matching the types of parts you are putting together, not the specific board.
Not the specific part. Exactly. So if you find a different motherboard that you want to do this lab with, that's fine.
Okay, so the key point is if you put DDR2 RAM in a DDR3 board, we're going to fail you on the lab. If you put an AGP graphics card into a PCI Express 16 slot, we're going to fail you in the lab. If you put a Xeon CPU into a socket 939 AMD, we're going to fail you on the lab. That's That's what we're judging. You've got to get the right parts for whatever board you pick. And if you want to pick the board that's in your desktop, and you can find out what that is by using Spexy, which is available from the same people that do CCleaner, if you fill in the table properly and give us all the parts and what can go in your board, we'll accept that as a valid lab. Grace may need to have to run them past me so I can help check the tech specs on them. But the key is to match the parts. That's the aim of the lab. So if you want to do a different board, that's fine. Although, don't do a different board that you already happen to have the parts list for because your mate at the computer shop did it for you. That doesn't teach you anything, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, the idea Sounds is to good. Go out on the web and find...
It's not going
to
help you at all.
...the compatible parts.
I mean, because I was looking at somebody's lab... Because I was looking at somebody's lab, and I had to look, because the other thing this board does not do is support quad-core CPUs. So we can't do any of that. Dual-core, yeah. Quad-core, no. And I was looking at that, and I noticed that this article had said that you could not have any RAM that was over 800. So that's where that came from.
We'll have a look at that and chase that down. It honestly depends. Most modern boards do run the front side bus independent to the RAM. They actually clock the RAM bus separately, so I'll have to have a look at that that article later. I think the point of the article is that there is no point putting RAM in that's faster than your front side bus, not that it won't actually function, so I'll have to see what the article has to say. Unfortunately, Tom's hardware is a little bit ad-heavy for me to easily research that one.
If you're going to do that RAM, that motherboard, in that case, I'll accept both. RAM with a speed of 800 is not hard to find, though.
Well, it is possible that there's some incompatibility with that specific board.
Finding 667 is getting
board.
Hard to find.
That's kind of what it looked like. It said, nah. It just said, no. You don't. Oh, yeah. That's what I'm stuck in my old computer. Anyway... Are there any other questions about the lab?
If anybody has any questions, they can email them through to... a lot of you will have Grace's direct email address if you don't want it to go to all the instructors. The other thing you can do is you can organise a time to... Grace can make herself available on Skype. I'm sure... Sean can, I can, there's a lot of us that'll come up on Skype and give you a hand. There's also a lot of other students.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I am. You're not. Basically, yeah, it's completely okay to ask for help on this lab. It is a really quite a complex lab, and we want to make sure that you learn how to do it and get it right. This lab is definitely all about the process. So hopefully that makes a little bit of sense, and please do not feel bad about asking for help. Okay, so if there are no other questions about anything, is everybody ready to go on to today's lecture? Are you still recording?
Mm-hmm. It still has a stop button, so I assume that means I'm recording. Is that right, Carrie?
Yep, then you are. He has lost his connection.
Okay.
So today we're going to talk about tool use. If you have finished Module 1, you have finished probably the hardest chapter in the entire ITE1 curriculum, because Chapter 1 is seriously difficult. Rather than 8 sections like last week, we've got 3 this week. So this should be nice and quick. We might even get this done in an hour. I'm not going to do quiz. We'll do the quiz for this chapter next week, because... there's no way that it's going to work with the ping times we've got. So, we're just going to go on to the lecture. Today we'll be talking about safety and tool use. If you, as I said, if you've taken your exam and have done all that, you've passed the hardest chapter. Most of the stuff that we're going to talk about today is common sense stuff, but we have to go over it anyway, just to say we've done it. So, safety procedures are to guard against 3 types of damage. Can someone name something that safety procedures will protect?
The computer, electrical shocks?
Loss of data?
You in the computer?
Yes. You, the environment, and the computer are the three things. So I think we've got all of them in there somewhere. Remember, this is one thing that you really want to keep in mind, that you are no longer only doing this work for yourself. You could possibly be doing work for other people. And when you do work for other people, liability comes in. If you damage someone else's property or data or get someone else hurt, or your organization violates environmental code, you can face legal action. So you are responsible, and you can be liable for this stuff. So we've got to make sure we do everything by the books. We've got two parts of the computer that okay. we should not try to
They are the power supply because they and the monitor. Contain extremely high voltage.
And these
you
are
have
in your
to be
test.
A specially trained technician
so
to do these
can
repairs.
Anyone tell me what those two parts are? That you are going to want to actually do as a blind person?
Power supply and monitor.
Power supply and monitor.
And usually cheaper just to replace these components. Oh, there we go. Now everybody's answers come in. Sorry about that. Good job, guys. These two components have really high voltage, and they are the exception to the always wear an anti-static wrist strap rule, because you do not want the high voltage going through you. You do not want to be the ground for that voltage. Printers can also
really
be dangerous to repair.
Grace.
They can... Okay. No problem. I'm at 1330 right now. Not awesome, but it'll do. Okay. So printers are also can be dangerous to repair. They contain high voltage wires and parts that can stay very hot for a long time, even after they've been turned off. So if you're doing anything more than, say, replacing ink and toner or paper, be very careful. Read the manual. Make sure you understand where these parts are and if it's really, really something where you have to get inside of the printer. Printers are really cheap these days. If it's just an inkjet printer, you might consider paying the $60 to replace it, because it may be cheaper.
Laser printers, not so much. Worth repairing in some instances.
Nah.
But generally, you'd take them to a qualified printer technician. You wouldn't repair them yourself, because there is 6,000 volts
absolutely.
In the primary corona wire.
You don't want that going through you.
No.
Any questions on that bit? Okay. We'll go on to safety in the workplace. A safe workspace can prevent many accidents. It is clean, organized, and well lighted. The exact opposite of mine. So,
well lighted.
Some basic common sense safety practices.
Lighted.
For the sighted people.
What did I say?
That's correct. No, it's correct.
Well,
it's well lighted.
Okay, I even wrote well lighted down here.
Yeah, no, you're fine. You said that. I think
way.
I was simply commenting
it
on how
well
pointless
lighted.
That was for me.
Well lit is when you douse it in petrol and strike a match, okay?
Is
so well lighted.
Or when you're well lit.
Okay, I was going to say.
Well,
what did I say? I thought I said well lighted. I'm sorry, that's exactly what it says in the note. I picked that bit right up out of the notes, so... Okay. Yeah, well, maybe your workspace doesn't need to be well lit. Because you're blind. And it doesn't really matter. But hey, if you're working with a sighted technician, it might make them feel a lot more comfortable. We're going to talk about some basic... pretty common sense safety practices when working with computers.
I was just going to make the point, actually, that one of the things I've noticed is that as sighted people get older, due to macular degeneration and various other eye wobblies, they need a lot more light than you would think they would need, so you do need a well-lit environment if you're working with someone else. Please don't be like a blind acquaintance of mine who unscrews all of the light bulbs from their apartment to stop people from turning
just
the lights
kidding.
On. No, he unscrews every light bulb and he puts the one or two light bulbs that need to be in the sockets in when some poor sighted person comes over and wants some light. So I think a little bit of a happy medium there would be certainly something worth doing. That's pretty amazing.
Oh, that's awful.
Well, it would save him a lot on power bills. I can attest to quite a bit of money lost that way.
No, because the socket, there's still power going to the socket, isn't there?
You're still going to send electricity out of that socket.
No, you're
right,
not.
But I meant,
no.
But if you turn the light switch off,
it won't draw any current if the bulb's not screwed in.
Well, I've had sighted people leave lights on all the time, and I didn't know it was on for 2 days, and my power bill was not exactly low.
Have you... What sort of mobile phone have you got, Aiden? Sorry, I'm having a name problem this morning.
Nokia E71.
Okay, go grab a copy of a utility called... go to www.seeingwithsound.com and grab a copy of The Voice. That is your free light detector, and it won't cost you a cent. It's very cool.
Sweet.
And it does some other interesting things,
And it works.
Too.
It's very cool.
It'll even run on your phone, Luke, that came out of the Ark with Noah.
It runs on my 6620.
Will it really?
It runs on the 6620, which is old.
It runs on the 3600.
I'll show you how to
use it when I get there. In fact, that's why I bought the phone.
Sweet as. Thank you.
I actually ran it on a 6600, so and I saw somebody run it on a Nokia N-Gage. So it runs on all of the phones all the way back to first edition.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, that's awesome, thank you. Because yeah, we've had that problem as well. Living in an apartment, two blind people, it can be interesting.
I wish I'd known that before I had the government buy me a light probe.
Yeah. Oh no, that's not a problem.
Oh no, keep the light probe. I want one.
Both of them are good.
I'd much rather have a light probe. If you don't want the light probe, send it my way. I'll take
yeah,
it.
Yeah, really. Me too.
We'll see where how
there are.
Works.
Yeah, if you go to www.seeingwithsound.com, it's called The Voice. There's two versions. One's for the PC, and you can use it with a web camera and stuff. And one is for the mobile phones. And if you're... Pranav is actually the guy to talk to about it. He does a lot of sonification of images with it, and it's how he looks at various images by actually sonifying them and taking a look at them with the voice.
He did a fantastic tutorial out there somewhere. Anyway.
Yeah, back to the lecture, but that is kind of relevant because you may actually need to look at lights and things with the voice or whatever, and it may not be perfect, but it's one way of doing it. And for Carol's benefit, it will run on your phone as well, so... except her camera slide's broken, so we'll get that on the next edition of that phone. But it's a good bit of kit.
Yeah. It's very neat. You can do pictures and all sorts of good stuff with it too. I can't quite figure that one out, but hey, if you really, really have that kind of mind, it's an awesome tool.
I heard of it. I just didn't have I think I tried it like years ago with my old phone. I just didn't know it worked with the modern ones.
Yeah, it's a Java midlet. It'll work with anything. It'll run on pocket PCs and stuff as well. If Java can get at the camera, it will. It's not just a Symbian thing. It's actually a .jar. So yes, Sean, it will run on your Motorola, whatever it is. It'll just be fine if it's got a camera on it.
Oh, I should try that. Oh my God, I didn't even think of that.
A Motorola Q thing, is it? Because my friend has a Q9 or something.
Yes.
Will it run on the iPhone?
No, it won't run on the iPhone. I don't think the iPhone has Java.
How can you use that, Sean? It doesn't even have Wi-Fi.
I'll talk to you about that on Skype sometime.
Okay, back to what we were talking about, the very, very common sense suggestions and guidelines. Remove your watch or any other jewelry and secure loose clothing. You don't want to get anything caught in the computer. Turn off the power and unplug equipment before performing service. If you're working on a laptop, remove the battery as well. Very important to do, because you can harm components and you if you don't do this. So, and this is on the test. It asks you, what is the first thing you do before servicing a computer? And you've got this on plenty of your tests. It is always unplug it, remove it from power source, turn it off, remove the battery, all of that. All of that is there, and all of it will be the right. Cover any sharp edges inside the computer case with tape, or wear really thin gloves. Never open a power supply or monitor, as we've said. Do not touch areas in the printer that may be hot or use high voltage. Have a fire extinguisher and first aid kit nearby, and make sure you know where they are. Having somebody say, oh yes, we've got one, is not good enough as blind people. Make sure you know exactly where they are. Hey, even possibly bring a first aid kit that you are familiar with in your tool bag, so that you can access it and work with it on your own, because that's going to be much quicker than trying to figure out how to use theirs. When repairing components, always be aware that there is the possibility of a fire, and knowing what to do in case of a fire can save property and lives. When components short out or overheat, you will smell a burning odor. I'm sure most of us know exactly what burning plastic smells like. Well, that's what you're going to smell, this electrical burning plastic. It's pretty gross. Here are the procedures to follow in case of a fire. Never fight a fire that is out of control or not contained. Always have a planned fire escape route before beginning any work. Get out of the building quickly, contact emergency services for help, and be sure to locate and read the instructions on fire extinguishers in your workplace before you have to use them. Get somebody to help you with this. Safety training may be available in your organization. Take advantage of that. In the United States, there are 4 classifications for fire extinguishers. A different letter, color, and shape identify each fire extinguisher. And they're talked about in Figure 2. And each fire extinguisher has a specific chemical to fight different types of fires. Class A is paper and wood, plastics, cardboards. Class B is gasoline, kerosene, organic solvents. Class C is electrical equipment. And Class D is combustible metals. It is important to know how to use a fire extinguisher. Use the memory aid PASS, P-A-S-S, to help you remember the basic rules of fire extinguisher operation. Pull the pin, aim at the base of the fire, not at the flames, squeeze the lever, and sweep the nozzle from side to side. Any questions on any of that?
Are fires rather common, or it seems like, I mean, the fact that, you know, they talk about fire extinguishers and stuff, if you do your job reasonably well and don't put the wrong cables in and stuff, are fires that common to worry about?
There's always the risk of fire. I told the story last week about my brother's girlfriend waking him up and going, Dan, your computer's on fire. And he came out, and there was a little fire burning inside his computer.
It's not hugely common. It's not like every time you do a computer repair, you're going to have something combust into flames, but it's something to be aware of.
I'm just imagining me setting up a geek squad and walking into a house with a fire extinguisher and first aid kit. I don't think that would inspire confidence.
Well, you keep the little tiny first aid kit in your tool bag.
Don't you guys have to carry fire extinguishers with you?
Well,
yeah,
no,
you don't have
I'm
to show
not...
anybody your first aid kit, but don't you guys have to?
Well, I'm not working for Geek Squad. I'm just thinking, like, because I don't think there is one in the Nanaimo, but I was thinking if I set up my own, like, if I did a, you know, door-to-door computer repair person, I wouldn't, like, I don't think I would have to walk in the place with a fire extinguisher. I mean, I guess, well, I've never really had a professional come into my house to look at computers. I've only had my friends do that, so I wouldn't know.
There are actually little ones. We've got one that's about 6 inches long and about 2.5 inches wide. It looks like a little can of fly spray or something. And it's for both electrical and a different other sort of fire. I can't remember what chemical it's got in it. But it's useful for quite a number of classes of fires. And it's a fairly small one. You could stack it in a backpack and nobody would even know you had it.
I didn't know they did that.
Yeah, there's little ones.
They made them all that. Oh, that's cool.
I've got one that sort of looks like wasp spray, ABC.
Good to know. I'll have to try that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, Luke.
Go ahead, Luke.
Question. With the, for instance, over here we have, I'm assuming that's one of the classes of extinguishers you mentioned, we've got a dry powder extinguisher. I've never used one, but I've talked to people who have, and they make a hell of a mess. How likely are you to, I guess, damage components by putting out a fire. You know what I mean? How do you sort of negate that sort of risk or whatever?
It doesn't matter. You put out the fire.
You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. Mm. So you put the fire out because the fire is going to do more damage than you not putting it out. And if the fire is honestly that bad, then obviously, you know, you've got to do something about it. For example, emptying a bucket of water onto an electrical fire is a pretty stupid thing to do. I'm sure everybody can understand why that would be.
And onto a grease fire, too.
Look, the whole point of fighting any kind of a fire is to make sure it doesn't spread. Those components are probably done. But you don't want it to spread to, say, the building, yourself, anyone else in the room, other computers. That computer's probably a casualty.
I'm assuming the only way to cause a fire if you're fixing a computer is to mess up and put the wrong cable.
No. True. Things can go critical. You can have power supply caps short out. Sorry, go on.
Well, I was working and all of a sudden my roommate started swearing. He'd cleaned his monitor with a tissue paper, wetted down with some kind of glass cleaner, and the static spark had started a fire. You know, just a little one, but...
Jesus.
That wasn't a very smart way to do
that. I don't think it's
all...
How?
I don't think it's all that uncommon for putting the fire out to cause more water damage and stuff than the actual fire. I mean, when you're talking a house fire and stuff.
Well, I think it depends. Yeah, it really depends on what type of fire you're talking, because, I mean, it depends on how they do it too. I mean, if you actually when you get the fire trucks in, maybe. But if for an electrical fire, you really have to be careful that those things can get really nasty and hard to beat really quickly, I would assume.
Brian had something to say.
Yeah, I know. Brian, you're up.
Yeah, you wouldn't think they're all that common, but I actually had one where a power supply. I wasn't doing anything special. A power supply blew, and it took two hard drives with it, and it actually heated up and burnt the circuit boards on hard drives, and it wasn't kidding. My basement was full of smoke and all sorts of things, and I wasn't doing anything special. It sometimes happens.
You know what? We had somebody who was, actually one of our exploration students just had a power supply do that last week, and I don't even think he was doing anything to the power supply. I think he was just sitting there. And he tweeted about it. He's like, my power supply's on fire.
In terms of repairing stuff, though, would it be pretty hard to cause a fire without having power running through stuff? Or
generally speaking, it's a case of being prepared, guys. It's pretty rare. You can have static electricity causes fire. What if some girl's left a bottle of liquid paper on a nail polish remover on the desk and you get a static spark that sets up the nail polish remover? What if some bloke's left his Zippo lighter sitting there and I don't know. You know, there's all sorts of things that could happen. It's the key point is here, if you're working in an organisation or something, which is what this key thing is bound to, you need to know where the fire extinguisher is, or you need to know which people know where it is so that if you need somebody to get hold of it, they can get hold of it very, very quickly for you. And that's the key to this section on fire safety. There's no point standing there and wobbling going, oh, I do not believe it is on fire, and I have no idea what to do. Oh,
I'm blind. I guess I'll just wait here to die.
Well, that's a bit extreme, but yeah.
Well.
I think even one of the less advantaged blind people can turn and run.
No, dude.
I see some Darwin honorable mentions coming up in the future, maybe.
Someone's key is stuck.
And she couldn't find her door.
What's that?
There we go.
Who couldn't find a door?
Somebody's keyed up. Yeah. Oh, it wasn't. This girl that we know. No, it was Carol. No, just kidding. It's somebody who's not actually in the academy. It's just a friend of ours.
Yeah, but we started the story and it's gone now. Oh, well.
You didn't hear the rest of the story?
No,
I didn't hear any of it. Carrie, I don't know about anyone else, but I can't hear you.
Yeah, I think Carrie's gone.
Okay, so... Not anymore.
No, he's gone.
You're kind of there, but it's the same as as what Paul was doing before.
The only reason you could hear him was that you heard him on Grace's microphone, because they're in the same room.
Oh, true. Yeah.
Hang on. No. Jiggle
no,
the plug
too
again.
Staticky.
Yeah. Okay. Try that.
There we go.
There we go.
Yep. You're good. Good.
Okay. Here comes the story. All right. Okay. No, it was actually a mute switch that got flicked. Okay, this girl basically was setting fire to things in her room. She was burning some paper for a ritual. As I said, don't ask. And she'd put all this paper into this garbage bin to set fire to it. And she managed to set off her smoke detector. And the smoke detector went off and she panicked and started running round and round in circles going, "Help! Help! How do I get out? Help! Help!" And basically her housemate had to come in and drag her out and go and said, "Don't set things on fire in your bedroom ever again, and make sure you know where the door is if you're going to do this sort of stuff." And she was very bashful.
Wow.
I bet. Well, if her pride got enough of an injury, that I could definitely, honorable mention, as I said.
Seriously, if you panic, some people go to pieces under panic, and it's very easy for people to just lose the plot in an emergency. And I saw a thing on Twitter the other day that basically said if you survive the first 90 seconds of a plane crash, you're likely to live. And the same is true in things like fires and stuff. Obviously, there are different rules to that, but it's keeping your head and being a bit sensible.
Sure, once panics had said, the simplest task can be very, very difficult.
Oh, yeah, I suppose. And I guess if you're blind, I mean, it does take... You do have to think more than someone...
You have no sonar!
And stuff. Yeah.
Nope.
These things... It's not like every day, every time you do repair a computer, or every time you're sitting in front of a computer, it's going to bust out
into flames. These are the worst case scenarios.
And it's going to be horrible, and you're going to burn down your house. This is the worst thing. You might have this happen once or twice in your life as a computer technician. It's not something you have to be scared. Oh my God, I shouldn't repair computers because there's fire hazard. It's something you need to be aware of and know what you're going to do in that situation.
Yeah, remember, we don't want to let the smoke out of the components.
Yeah, they work while the smoke's in them.
Right. Any other questions on fire safety? Go ahead. What's your question? No, you're going to need the electrical fire ones. These are electrical fires.
Okay, I couldn't hear the question.
Carol's it's not going to do you a whole lot of good if somebody only has the one for paper and wood. You can't hear Carol. She's not online. Carol's not even here. She's talking to me.
Or who
she's
was
sitting
that?
Next to me because we don't have an internet connection.
Oh.
She's asked if she has asked. It was Carol, who's sitting next to me. She's asking if somebody only has the classification for paper and wood, if that's going to do you any good. And the answer is no, it's not. So this is why you might just have a little fire extinguisher in your toolkit, just in case for the right cause for the fire that you want to put out. Yeah, because Bob Hicks says he has one for A, B, and C, so yes, you can get ones for multi-purposes as well.
Uh, Okay, so here's a little optional research assignment for next week. Find out what sort of multiple class fire extinguishers you might be able to get. If you can't find it, we're not going to assess it on you, but might be useful information for the rest of the class. Can you get multi-class fire extinguishers, and what sort of things are you looking at? If somebody wants to have a bit of a poke around, obviously it'll be interesting to find out.
Yeah, costs are good. I don't think they're that expensive. Yep, Carrie has. Carrie will be back with us in a minute. Any other fire safety questions?
Isn't there still a bit more to that section?
Okay. Nope, that's it. We've got more safety concerns.
Oh, I thought there was a part that basically said if the fire gets too far out of control, you call the fire authorities and you, at that point, you just get the heck out.
Yep, we said that. Don't fight a fire that is fight a fire
really?
That's out of control.
I thought you
sorry, maybe I wasn't paying attention. Maybe I wasn't paying attention, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's what I yeah, exactly. Yes, no, I did say it before, but I should reiterate it again. If a fire is out of control, get out. Don't use the elevator, go down the steps because elevators are a bad idea in fire. Go down the steps, get out of the building and call for help. Don't sit there and roast marshmallows like Aiden. Okay, keep food and drinks out of your workspace because you don't want water damage or food bits inside of your components. Not only will this cause damage, but if you have to open that up again, it is really, really nasty.
Ew, I bet.
And
ew.
You know what? In Australia, you can get cockroaches inside living inside of your computers. So, don't do it.
Talk about bugs, getting all the bugs worked out.
I have a story. There was this woman. Yeah, there's this woman who used to. She have a Braille display. Oh, yeah. There's a woman, and she sends her Braille display in to Humanware about once a year. And every year, they open it up, and it is infested with cockroaches. And they have to call the exterminators, because if they don't, then they're going to have a cockroach infestation at Humanware because this woman just sends her Braille display back when it's not working because it's
chock-a-block
full of cockroaches. Dealer meetings.
Nice.
Oh, you sell Humanware stuff. Interesting. How do you know? I mean, how did they get in there?
And finally, after
no,
this
Grace
happened
actually
about three
doesn't.
Years in a row, they're like, we're not going to repair your machines anymore.
No, she knows dealers. She doesn't actually.
I knew people. I have gone to dealer meetings before. I went to CSUN and shadowed a couple people for a couple of years. So I've actually gone to these dealer meetings and sat in.
God, that sounds like fun. I guess I'm kind of ashamed to admit that, but
it was so much fun. Oh, it was totally fun. Are you kidding? It was absolutely great. I just went as the go-to volunteer to get people coffees and stuff from the organization I was with, and do whatever needed doing. And I got to go in and sit at these dealer meetings and go to the dealer parties and all sorts of stuff. It was really quite cool.
Anyway, getting back to the thing.
Anyway, yeah. Okay. So keep your workplace clean and free of clutter so that you don't lose things, because it is very easy to lose one little screw in clutter with clutter. Bend your knees, not your back, when lifting heavy objects, because you can put your back out. Also never use an AC adapter to charge a device that it isn't meant to charge, because different devices have different voltage requirements, and charging them with the wrong adapter can damage both the charger and the device. You'll have that cool plastic burning smell once again. Those are my safety tips for you guys. Does anyone have any they'd like to add? Because I've got stuff on ESD and everything as well that we'll talk about. But general safety guidelines that I didn't cover that you think should be covered.
I was going to say that for those of us who make a habit of reading product manuals like I used to do, you will have seen over and over again the whole thing about only use the charger that comes with this device to charge this device. And for some of us who've been using AC adapters for a while, it's pretty common sense, but it's good that it's there.
What the about footwear?
I don't think there's mention in notes of footwear.
Actually not, but closed-toed shoes would probably be a good look.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I'm sorry. Well, so many people try to wear flip-flops to do everything anymore. I wouldn't put it past a lame-brain tech to try it and drop something.
Nice.
Fair enough. That's a good point, actually. That's why I'm asking for any safety tips that we didn't cover or weren't covered in the notes. That's a really good one.
Actually, I've had quite a number of girlfriends in the past that I've had to rouse on for cooking in flip-flops because it's quite dangerous. And it doesn't occur to people until, you know, you splosh a bit of hot oil or something. Usually not a problem when you're repairing a computer. But footwear is very important.
You wouldn't want to drop a tower on your foot, would you?
They're not mentioned directly in this section. They're only relevant when you're repairing optical fiber cabling.
You could wear them if it makes you feel better, but it doesn't. You
don't
have
to. For those of you who might have actual, and I didn't know this was a problem, an issue, but now I do. If you do not have a prosthetic eye and you do not have eyes, safety goggles when repairing a computer might be a really good idea.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because I've just found out, I found about two people, and I didn't even realize this could happen until this year, that do not choose not to wear prosthetic eyes for one reason or another and do not have one of their eyes. So you do, if you are doing that, probably want to wear goggles because you definitely don't want anything in your eyes.
But where do I store my screws then?
Not there.
Oh, God.
Not there.
Same place you keep your worms when you're ice fishing.
Okay, I'm sorry.
And I was kidding, by the way. I'm sorry. I don't mean to gross people out.
I know. That's okay. It's just a really disgusting image.
Yeah, pretty much.
He said, where do you store your screws? We just shared the joy with Carol here. Okay. Anyway, EST protection stands for electrical static discharge. This is when static electricity builds up on a surface, then jumps to a computer component. We're aware of EST when it reaches 3,000 volts. That's when you kind of feel maybe your hair standing up a little bit. If EST makes a noise or you receive a shock, then you're probably over 10,000 volts. Now, does anyone know how much it takes to hurt a computer component?
Isn't it like 20 or 300 volts? But define shock. Okay, 30, I guess. Sorry. But define shock, because I walked across a carpet and touched something. Do you mean the little tick that you get when you do that, or do you mean the shock that actually makes your muscles jump?
The little carpet tick is what she's referring to. For you to be I think it's 3,000 volts.
Okay, because, I felt my muscles jump
if the shock causes pain,
twice.
Then, that's a different kind of shock.
Oh, okay, I see.
If it's a cold day and you touch somebody, like you're walking along and somebody's you've got someone with one of those really big fluffy coats and they shock you and it hurts, that's probably over 10,000 volts.
Yeah, 10,000 volts, low amperage.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm just walking out, Grace. I'm going to go talk to the people at the library, see if I can get our internet fixed. I think it might be an AMCOM problem, so just letting you know, everybody know I'm off lecture for a sec.
Okay, sweet. We should probably report it. Okay. All right. So, yes, to actually have a computer component cause damage to a computer component, you only need 30 volts. That is a tenth of what you can possibly detect. So it is not something you're going to usually be able to tell. Go ahead. 100? Yeah, fair enough. You will notice that I can completely not do math. This is completely normal. This is why I don't teach binary. Anyway, so since we can't feel it, we can't see it, we can't detect it, here are some precautions to protect against static electricity. Usually components come in an anti-static bag. These are plastic, and they feel extremely smooth. I don't really know any other way to describe it. If anyone else wants to have a go, you're welcome to, but they just feel really, really smooth and extra plasticky.
That's pretty much it, yeah.
Yeah, they're kind of thick, too.
Yeah, I was going to say that they're thicker than standard bags, and they're designed to fit the component.
Unless they're not designed to fit the component, you can get anti-static, make your own anti-static bags. Those are not specially shaped.
Oh, yeah, I was wondering, because I have a hard drive that's in its own form-fitting bag, and I use it as an external. So I was wondering about getting just a normal standard sandwich bag and just bunging it in there and maybe having more vent space.
No.
Okay.
You don't want to do that.
No. Don't do that.
Well, I didn't know because my roommate just said, we'll keep it in the bag to avoid shocking it. So I thought, well, do I keep it in the bag? Well, what if I move it? Or how do I avoid it overheating and
you really
melting
should put it in an enclosure. I mean, if it's an internal
drive,
are you
sticking this in and using it inside the bag?
Yeah, I got this cool little SATA to USB cable. SATA/IDE to USB cable. So I got it pointed out of the bag, and I got just... Why? Because the SATA cable is $20 and the enclosure is
$40. No, it's just an LI.
Okay, that cable is something you really only want to have. Yeah, for temporary things. If you want to use a drive as an external on a permanent basis, you need to be buying yourself a USB drive enclosure and putting that drive in there, because you are really taking a risk with that.
One good bump of that cable and your drive's done.
Yeah, really.
Oh. Okay.
If you're transferring stuff, you're going to scramble the data if you hit that cable.
Oh, fair enough.
I'd also
I know my roommate walked past and the power got cut, but
oh, that too.
What were you saying, Marshall?
There's like...
Yeah.
I'd also be worried about heat dissipation.
Yeah, go ahead, Marshall. What were you saying about heat dissipation?
Well, yeah, and that's the question I had was, I was trying to find a way to make it to...
Oh, absolutely.
To kind
of it's
going to
get hot in that bag.
Out. Fair enough.
Yeah,
I guess
you
want to
get a case. Spend the $40. Take our advice.
I think he's going to need to learn how to come into lecture so he doesn't keep popping in and out all the time. Just random. I don't think he knows that this David person.
No, it's not his fault. He's got wireless internet, unreliable wireless internet.
Oh, okay. But like I said, he doesn't even get a chance to make it down here. So I just assume he didn't know how to do it.
No, he does. He got down here once. We'll have a discussion about that later, and I'll explain that to you. What his deal is. So.
Okay.
So that really, because those transfer cables are just, if you have a hard drive that you're pulling out of a box and you have to get the data off to maybe transfer it to another computer, then it might be the time that you would actually use that. Other than that, you really do want a case.
Okay, fair enough. I just thought I could go a wee bit cheaper, but I guess that was a bit too cheap.
Just a bit. I mean, it's an easy mistake to make, so don't feel bad, but just so you know. Okay, so we want to keep all of our anti-static bags, or we want to keep our components in the anti-static bags until we install them. That's the main point that he just made for me. So, You should also store any components that are not in use, like a hard drive that you're going to transfer to another machine, but you got to wait a day. So you're going to put that back in an anti-static bag. Use grounding mats on workbenches. Use grounding mats on floors and work areas. Use anti-static wrist straps when working on computers. Now, an anti-static wrist strap clips to the computer, an unpainted part of the computer. You've got a long kind of telephone cordy thing. And then you've got a little thing around your wrist, kind of like what you'd use on a dog leash, but it's Velcro. And you wear that around your wrist. And this allows you to be grounded. And before you do any work on a machine, this is in your test, touch an unpainted part of the case first to ground yourself and to make yourself neutral with all of your components. Electromagnetic interference, EMI, is the intrusion of outside electromagnetic signals in transmission media, such as copper cabling in a network environment. EMI distorts the signals so that the receiving devices have difficulty interpreting them. There are many sources of EMI. They can be man-made, such as motors. This is in your test, motors, or power lines, or natural, such as electrical storms or solar radiation. Wireless networks are affected by radio frequency interference, RFI. RFI is the interference caused by radio transmitters and other devices transmitting the same frequency. For example, a cordless telephone can cause problems with a wireless network when both devices use the same frequency. So, if you ever wondered why they got rid of the 2.4 gigahertz cordless phones, now you know why. Microwaves
also cause interference. They didn't get rid of them. A lot of them are still around.
They're not allowed to sell them anymore. You're usually getting 5.8s now. You won't find, I don't even think you can find a 2.4 gigahertz cordless phone or buy one. At least here you pretty much can't. Because everybody had these G wireless routers, and the phones, the G wireless routers operate on the 2.4 gigahertz bands, so do your phones. So people were having all of these problems with the wireless and these 2.4 gigahertz. Microwaves can also cause interference when positioned close proximity to wireless networking devices. So if you've ever, and I've had this problem, and now I know why, if you ever worked in an organization that used wireless, and around lunchtime you totally had problems with the internet, that would be your problem.
Also, if you're on a wireless headset and you happen to be right in front of the microwave, it kind of makes the sound go and do funny things. Because the wireless headset that I have, at least, is also a 2.4 gigahertz headset.
Yep.
You've probably heard that before.
Yep. Love those FreeTalk wireless headsets, but they do have interference problems sometimes.
Yep.
Climate can also affect computer components. This is very testable material, you guys. If it is very dry, there is more chance of ESD. If it is warm, components may overheat. If it is humid, components may be damaged by moisture. Very simple and really testable. You'll see this all over the place. Now we're going to review electrical concepts. And they put this in here again, which makes me very happy because we're just going to do a short review on it. Computers need both voltage and current to operate. Can someone please define voltage?
It's the pressure that forces the electrons through the conductor.
That's power, isn't
it? That is right. It's the force. And what is the current? That's voltage.
It's measured in amperes.
Power
isn't
is watts.
It the amount of electrons flowing through?
Yep, the amount of electrons that go through. Go ahead. Okay. I'll keep going. That's called current. When voltage is not steady, computers have trouble operating and can suffer permanent damage. So, what do we do about this? We've got, we've got to go over the power fluctuations first. And these are in your test, so pay attention. A blackout is a complete loss of AC power. Pretty simple. A blown fuse or a damaged transformer or a downed power line can cause a blackout. Brownouts are reduced voltage levels of AC power that lasts for a period of time. Brownouts occur when power line voltage drops below 80% of the normal voltage level. Overloading electrical circuits can cause a brownout. And this happens a lot of times in the summer when everybody's running their air conditioning. Noise is interference from generators and lightning.
And so can California noise results not paying their power bill to BC.
Oh, fair enough.
Oh, yeah.
Noise results in unclean power, which can cause errors in a computer system. Spike is a sudden increase in voltage that lasts for a very short period and exceeds 100% of the normal voltage on a line. Spikes can be caused by lightning strikes and can also occur when electrical systems come back on after a blackout. A power surge is a dramatic increase in voltage above the normal flow of electrical current. A power surge lasts for a few nanoseconds, and that is a 1/1,000,000th of a second. So the difference between spikes and surges are a spike is usually caused by lightning. A surge is probably more of a blip with the power company.
Sorry, all caused by a bird.
Okay. That'll usually cause a blackout. The poor bird will just knock the power line and it'll cut out. A surge would be caused by a bird?
It can be, I think. Like, if they manage to either land, like, across both lines or, like, both lines hit each other or whatever, it can do bad things.
I think most of the time when that happens, the lines go out. The transformer just blows and they've got to go fix it.
No.
Just remember that spikes are sudden power
sudden
fluctuations. Those two usually terms paired in your head
they're
will
very
help you.
Yes, they're on the
because
test.
That's how they...
I can guarantee you, you've got a question on that in the test. There are several devices that protect computers and their components from power fluctuations. Surge suppressors help protect against damage in surges and spikes. A surge suppressor diverts extra electrical voltage on the line to the ground. So this is just your regular in America. You have a power strip built into most of your power boards. In Australia, you actually have to buy them special.
So like a surge strip over there does not necessarily have a surge protector in it. A power strip does not have a surge protector in it all of the time.
You have what it's called is a power board, and that power board most of the time does not have one because they're more expensive to manufacture over here because we have 240 volts. Yeah, I know.
Yucky.
What's a power board? Is that in your house, or you mean like the circuit breaker box, or?
It's like your power strip that you've got in America and Canada, but there's no surge protection on it.
The old power strips didn't used to have it.
But now most of them do. Even the dodgy ones you buy at Walmart will have one.
I don't know whether mine does.
I mean, that's just about a guarantee. If it's got a switch on it and two little... Maybe not, then. If you've got a switch and a couple of modem ports on it, it does.
Modem ports? Whoa. On a power strip? Mine's got a switch.
Some of the new ones have modem ports, Grace. Not all of them do.
Okay. A lot
if
of
you're
them,
not sure,
a lot of them will
ask
now.
Someone to read and make sure it talks
then
about surge
not.
protection or suppression. If you're not sure, get someone to read it for you. Like on the bottom or something. Or buy a new one, and it'll probably be pretty sure to have it.
It probably will. Just have a quick look with the new one. Just have someone give you a quick look on the box. It probably does. I mean, 95% in America, you're getting a surge protector. Oh, no, that's the other point Carrie made. It might not be the best surge protector if you buy the $20 Walmart variety, but you'll have it.
Just a point that surge protectors are measured in, the capacity of a surge protector is measured in joules. Oh no, I'm in and out like a blowfly. The surge protector capacities are measured in joules, and it's the number of joules of energy the gas tube or whatever the surge protector is using can absorb before it actually overloads and blows things up. So that's how they basically work.
An uninterruptible power supply, UPS, helps protect against potential electrical power problems by supplying electrical power to a computer or other device. The battery is constantly recharged while the UPS is in use and there's power going to it. The UPS is able to supply a consistent quality of power when brownouts and blackouts occur. Many, actually most now, UPSs are able to communicate directly with the operating system on a computer. This communication allows the UPS to safely shut down a computer and save data prior to the UPS losing all electrical power. Never plug a printer into a UPS because printers can overload them, so you want to just leave that plugged into the power strip, because if your printer has a problem, then that's not such a big deal, but if the printer overloads the entire UPS, you've just lost yourself a whole lot of money.
Probably CRT monitors are the other things you shouldn't plug into a UPS, because the power
don't put those in
CRT will actually overload things.
Okay, a standby power supply, that is a SPS, helps protect against potential electrical power problems by providing a backup battery to supply power, hold on just a second, when incoming voltage drops below the normal levels. The battery is on standby during normal operation, and when voltage decreases, the battery provides DC power to a power inverter, which converts it to AC power for the computer. This device is not as reliable as a UPS because the time it takes to switch over to the battery. If the switching device fails, the battery will not be able to supply power to the computer. So the differences here are that a UPS is always providing power and the battery is just always being charged, so it's getting the power through the battery. The standby power supply is standing by, ready to kick in at a millisecond's notice when the power voltage drops below normal levels. You might have problems with that couple of milliseconds where it switches over, so they're not as reliable. Conrad, what was your question?
Carrie mentioned that we shouldn't plug the monitor into the UPS, but I know there are some monitors which are plugged into the back of the system.
What now? There are monitors that do
how
which?
Does that affect the power?
Oh, do you mean like USB monitors? Or?
No, regular computer monitors which are plugged into the back of your computer system. So instead of plugging
that's
it into
fine.
The wall? Or...
No, it's you're not going to plug it into the wall then at all. No, because it's going to get its power off the computer. I've not actually seen one of those, though.
That's
so
clever.
That would be very clever.
Ones.
No, it's... Go ahead, Bob.
I said older ones did. I think I have an old IBM Aptiva that had two wall-type plugs on the back.
Those Aptivas were weird, though. I mean, let's
wow,
be honest.
Cool. Okay, so what you've got then is it doesn't matter. If you can't plug it into the back of the computer, that's not going to overload you. What's going to overload you is if you plug that big old CRT monitor into the UPS. Anything plugged into the computer and that is receiving power from the computer takes way too little power to even matter to your UPS.
But those same monitors, you had the option of actually plugging them into the wall.
If you plug it into the wall, you don't plug it in to the UPS, if it's a monitor. Go ahead, Luke.
I'm sorry, I must be slightly confused then. What or where or something is the UPS? Because I thought this replaced the standard power supply actually in the back of your computer box. Am I mistaken there?
No. A UPS is a box that would lay on the floor that you're going to plug all of your cables into.
Okay, so it takes the place of, for instance, a 6-plug power board or something like that.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, that's better.
Actually, can I make a comment?
You can.
Go ahead.
Yeah, what you'd actually want to do is plug the monitor, the printer into the power strip, plug the UPS into the power strip, plug the computer into the UPS, because if, you know, anything that goes into the computer has got to go through the UPS in order for it to work, so you would not want to plug a monitor in if you had them, you know, one of the old computers that actually had the power for the monitor come out of the main computer box.
Yeah, I think the key point is the power strip. You've got to be careful plugging things into power strips because you've got overloads and earth leakage, residual current devices on power strips and stuff. So just be careful how much nesting you actually do on a power strip. What I would tend to do myself is I'd have a double adapter on the wall and I'd run one. I don't know whether you guys get double adapters over there. You probably do. I'd run one into the UPS.
Yeah, you can do that.
And I'd run one into the power strip. And I'd have all of the stuff that wasn't that like the printer and the monitor on the power strip, and I'd have all of the computer and that sort of stuff run off UPSs and run off the UPS. Normally, they tend to say that you shouldn't plug a power strip into a UPS. Well, I've done it, and it's usually okay. But if somebody sort of asks you, you should probably only use the number of outlets that are on the UPS. But hey.
Yeah, that's a common occurrence in our household.
How many outlets do you get on the UPS?
Depends on the UPS.
Depends on the UPS. Just like a power strip. Okay. Let me just see what kind of time we have. It's 11. We're going to stop here. And you guys are responsible for the first lab, which is a pretty simple lab about hardware manufacturer diagnosis tools. You're going to find out two brands of hard drive. You're going to look up one manufacturing tool, talk a little bit about it. Very, very simple little lab. So you've got an easy week. So if you have not caught up on your Module 1 stuff, now's the time to do so. And if you have any questions, go ahead and email. Ask if you guys want a study session for any of this stuff. Let us know and we'll set one up. Just request one, and we will see if we can get on Ventrilo and help you out, or Skype if you just want to do it privately. That's fine too. But we're here to help you, and we like to help you. So please, please, by all means, ask for help. And if we can point you in the right direction. We probably won't do your homework for you, but we'll at least get you on the right track and make your learning experience a good one.
All right, so have we split? Are we splitting Module 2 into two parts, or are we completely done with the module?
We're splitting Module 2, and we are going to split into two parts, and we will start Module 3 next week as well. I'd usually get through Module 2 in one go, but
We've had all these technical problems today.
Pretty crazy internet problems.